A new social media campaign is targeting celebrities who haven't spoken out against what's happening in Gaza. But is it working?
The sort of block out movement is a lot more about the shifting attitudes towards celebrity than it is about really achieving anything. Because yes, Kim Kardashian has lost followers, and there are some cases where celebrities are seeing a dent. But I think this movement misunderstands how traditional celebrities make most of their money.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, and we'll be talking about the celebrity blockout this week on Power User.
What is good, people of the internet? Welcome back to another episode of the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
And I'm Andrew.
And today we've got a pretty exciting episode because, like we talked about, we're going to have guests on, and we have a guest this week. Yeah. It is a pretty exciting guest, a fellow creator. You'll hear my intro for him in a second, but I think most of you will be familiar with his work. It's Hank Green. And yeah. We wanted to talk to him because we were just talking about his recent video about TikTok, which has a whole bunch of really interesting points. It's linked in the show notes. If you haven't already seen it, watch it. It's really good. Sort of explains the landscape of monetization for creators on YouTube versus TikTok and the things that are different between them. And we talk about that, but we also talk about a lot of other things. It's a really interesting conversation. The one thing I should mention is at like halfway through, we had some technical difficulties and did lose his video feed. So if you're watching the video version, that's what happens halfway through. But I mean, come on, it's Hank Green. You guys know what he looks like. Plus, you get to see his beautiful face in the first half anyway. So without any further ado, let's get into it. So we've got Hank Green joining us for Waveform this week. Hank Green, if you're unfamiliar with Hank somehow, then you've been actively avoiding the internet for the past 15 years, in which case, welcome. Appreciate you for joining us. Hank is an entrepreneur, creator, YouTuber, TikToker, creator of VidCon, and half of the Vlog Brothers, and someone who's been creating for longer than I have, which I don't get to say very often. So, Hank, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, well, it helps to just be older than you. I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan, and we just established that we've never actually talked before, which is weird, and I'm very glad to be finally hanging out.
Same. I want to talk to you about all of the social media. And this is one of the fun things about having a podcast finally is I get to talk to people like you and having conversations about, I don't know, this whole world of social media, which it seems like you're all over it. Like obviously YouTube for the longest time, but we've got Instagram, we've got TikTok now. How do you, first of all, I just want to know what you say when you describe to people what you do. What do you say?
Well, I go to the easiest thing, which is I make educational videos for teachers and students. And then people are like, oh, tell me more. And I'm like, oh, you know, high school and early college and chemistry and all kinds of stuff. I have a company that does that. And that's like, it's much easier that way. And also I am kind of a personality and community leader and organizer that does philanthropy, and also I run a merchandise business that helps creators make money that has 50 employees and like, you lot. Know, I don't, yeah. My wife, when someone asks that question, is like, ugh.
Here we go.
I don't want to go through this again. So that's the easy thing to do. And like, that is sort of the majority of what I spend my time on anyway, is the educational content.
Yeah, I like it. I think I've watched your YouTube videos for a super long time, but the TikToks have started coming back up. You know, I spend a decent amount of time on TikTok, probably more than I'd like to admit. I think we all do. And I always see your videos pop up in my For You feed. Before I even followed you, I would just be like, oh, Hank's on TikTok now. Great. They're very educational. He's got all these great ideas. I love it. So I want to start with YouTube because I feel like that's the hub at the center of this creator economy of these videos that we've been making for so long. And when I tweeted your TikTok video, I sort of quoted one of the early points in the video, which is that YouTube actually does treat creators really well, like almost abnormally well. And
well,
I got
certainly now that like we've had some more data points on the field, like when it was just YouTube, it was like, well, that's normal. But now that we have other platforms out there showing us how they might do it, it does change the perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people push back just saying, oh, they, you know, they treat some creators well. They treat a few creators you might know well. But it's kind of like just in general, there's obviously they do a lot of things they don't have to. the little plaques they send us when you hit a subscriber milestone is a nice example, or having a contact at YouTube and things like that. But the sort of biggest point of that being the revenue sharing model. But just in general, now that you've been on YouTube for, I think, I'm going to say longer than anyone I've ever spoken to, how would you review YouTube as a platform as it exists in 2022? If you had to give them a rating, if you have some pros and cons, how do you assess the state of this gigantic company?
Yeah, I mean, that is difficult I feel like I need categories, you know, like the video player is like 10 out of 10. Yeah. And I think people often sort of don't think about the fact that the video player is 10 out of 10, but like that is actually, and like the upload experience is very good. And I think that, but like, I think a lot of the parts that I don't like about YouTube are just things that that are difficult parts of having done what YouTube did. You know, we're like all the hoops that you have to jump through, the moderation that is clunky and wrong often, the you know, demonetization and the algorithmic selection of this stuff and how it doesn't treat people fairly. Like all that stuff is, I find, very frustrating, but I also recognize that it's a difficult problem that was created by virtue of the existence of their platform. Like you couldn't do what they did without running into those problems.
Yeah.
And I don't know how else to solve them except for the way they solved them.
I had a weird random little meeting a long time ago where I think someone at Google said something like, you know, they have this massive success and the scale of their platform means that every tiny problem they have is now a problem at scale. Just because the whole thing is so big. It's like, oh, we have a tiny little spam problem. It's like, no, that's actually a massive problem now across the internet's video source. How'd you feel about them getting rid of the dislike counter? Any strong thoughts on that?
Oh, you're getting me into my most dangerous opinion on the platform.
Interesting.
Which is that I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay.
I recognize that it has like, that there's like, there are good parts and bad parts to getting rid of the dislike button. Like that's where I'm at. And the bad part for me, like the main thing that I don't like about it is that there are times when I would like to know instantly whether or not this video is going to contain useful information. And that was a really good way to see that. And you might think, well, then why get rid of it? Like, if it's doing a good, then why get rid of it? But a lot of the things you hear, and I'm like, oh, man, you asked me, I'm going to catch flack for this.
I love it.
A lot of what you hear from people is that they will say, well, how do we now tell a corporation that we didn't like their video? And like, and to me, that's sort of like, you took away my tool for mass brigading. And when we're mass brigading against YouTube or against EA or something, I'm like, I don't have a lot of sympathy for those people. Like they can deal with it. But like I also have seen it happen over and over and over again to people whose content like just like ideologically doesn't align with other people. And then you have these big groups of people who like organize themselves on Discords or subreddits, and then they come in and make that person's life miserable. And then all of their videos have this like weird permanent stain on them that you never don't see. It's there for the rest of the life of that video where you're just stuck with this like 70% dislike. And people look at those videos and they're like, why do people dislike this so much? What's going on? And it became used as an abuse tool. And YouTube didn't like that it was being used as an abuse tool. And they were like, how do we stop it? And, you know, you and I can see our dislikes in the back end. We know how many people are liking and disliking our content, which is useful. I certainly don't think that it's something that didn't have negative consequences. I just think it also had positive consequences. Like, I think there was a reason that they did it. I think they explained it fairly well why they did it.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, it's normal to disagree. And we also sort of exist on, like, the more time you spend on and the more sort of like you base your career and your business on a platform, the more you sort of like are actually having a relationship with it that's more like a citizen to a government. And people don't like it when the government makes decisions that they don't like. And that's a thing that happens. And I also think that it's fine for people to lodge their complaints because we don't get to vote for these people. So we might as well yell about the thing that matters to us. And so I certainly don't hold it against anybody who's mad about it. But from my perspective, like, there's more worrying things.
Yeah, I made my video talking about why there are downsides, obviously, and being a part of the tech community, I see, like, okay, I want to, for example, install, this doorbell, and I want to make sure I shut off power correctly and follow a tutorial. I no longer see that the tutorial has a bunch of dislikes because it's dangerous to me. And, like, that quick thing is just one of the negatives. My question was always just about, like, all of the downsides that they are solving for here aren't really actually being solved if the comment section doesn't also get better, because all of this mass brigading and hatred that follows people around via the like to dislike ratio also follows them around in the comment section, which needs a lot of work.
YouTube has given creators some pretty good tools for moderating comments, a lot better than other platforms. But that, that took time for that to develop. So there are ways to engage with that as a creator. But it doesn't like take away the reality that people are still going to be happily in group mobbing people. And like, it's just like one of the ugliest things I think about the internet is mobs of people being jerks. Eventually, I feel like maybe we'll get to the point where we realize it's actually really cringy and like embarrassing to be a member of one of those groups of people. But that's going to take some time, I think. It does often feel good to be a part of one of those groups. And not to say that I've never been a part of them. I also am sometimes part of a mob of people who's mad about something.
Yeah, we grow up out of the mob, but then somebody else grows up into the mob. So it's a tough cycle. One of the other fascinating things that I just saw recently, Twitter is testing downvotes, I think. So you can like a tweet, you can retweet a tweet, but they're testing downvotes specifically. How do you feel about Twitter as a platform? Twitter's just sort of like all over the place at this point. I actually really like Twitter, and there's not that many pieces to review, but I use it more than I think any other social platform other than TikTok right now.
Yeah, Twitter is such an interesting case because it is like far more influential than it is successful, especially by like market cap metrics, like Google and even TikTok and of course Facebook just dwarf the valuation of Twitter. But Twitter is extraordinarily influential and important, and like the people who use it are oftentimes defining culture and really in specific and powerful places. Mm-hmm. It's big in journalist circles, and then it's big in DC, and so it's a huge deal. And I like it as a platform, and I hate it as a platform. I like it when I can convince myself to use it in the ways that I enjoy it, and I hate it when I am subject to its whims and get drawn into things that I, know aren't my lane, and I know are just me being mad about something that I'm oversimplifying in my brain, which is something that all social media are good at. And I just feel like, there's a beauty in Twitter's long-term inability to innovate. Because it just remains what it is. But there's also like a huge, missed opportunity there. Like Twitter owned Vine. And like they had this extraordinarily interesting, powerful short form video platform. Do you know how many employees Vine had when it closed?
That's a really good question. I could guess. I'm going to guess Vine had 100 employees.
Had 50 employees. It had fewer employees than I do.
Wow. That's insane. That is incredible.
Like, just invest in it. Just figure it out. But like they just can't, Jack Dorsey obviously has always been very drawn in many directions and not interested at always in focusing on one thing. And I think that was not all the love to Jack if you're listening. But I think it's a hard way to be a CEO. And I know that because I'm the same way. I think that there are a lot of missed opportunities at Twitter. But at the same time, I kind of like that it's like chugging along, making $0, having not a lot of intrusive advertising and not like launching shorts like the moment that becomes interesting, like all the other platforms have.
No, they kept it simple for sure. I mean, that's kind of how it started. It started with just like 140 characters or 160 or whatever it was,
and text message platform,
just
basically
text, exactly. But I think maybe the most interesting platform of the hour is TikTok. I mean, it's it's ever consuming. What was the stat now? It just passed. It passed something, right? It passed one of the other largest sites in the world to be like one of the top five biggest sites. And I think by traffic, they're probably one of the biggest, period. TikTok is fascinating to me. So we've got these top, these couple top creators that are household names. We've got the D'Amelios, Addison Rae's, all of these at the top. And everyone knows who these people are. They're basically broken into mainstream. And then you have the sort of upper tier of the biggest TikTok creators. And I pay attention to a lot of them because the For You page serves me videos from them all the time. And it seems like they're all sort of itching to graduate from TikTok. And it's kind of fascinating to see. And a lot of them go to make a YouTube channel. A lot of them graduated from social media in general, and they go on to do TV stuff. You talked about this in your video, but I'm curious for your like quick take on like why are all the biggest TikTokers trying to just get out of TikTok, even though TikTok is massive and gaining momentum the way it is?
I mean, so there's two reasons. One is, you know, the story that you feel like you're a part of. And this was a thing when I was coming up on YouTube, every YouTuber wanted to be on TV. And so like they wanted to be a part of the story that their heroes were a part of rather than the story that they were inside of, which is just how we are. And that is a bad reason. Like in my experience, YouTubers who focused on YouTube did way better than YouTubers who were like, how do I do TV now? Like, there's not a lot of examples of YouTubers who made that transition well. But there are examples of certainly people who started on Vine and made the transition to YouTube really effectively and have become household names. And I think that that is also definitely an option for TikTokers. And the other reason is a very good reason, which is that you can, it is more valuable to be a YouTuber than to be a TikToker. And that is both economically, like you make more money per minute of time people spend on your content, but also because you develop a deeper relationship with your audience because you have them for more than 15 seconds or a minute or 3 minutes at the outside. Yeah. And that that is how you, that is how you, like, you know, TikTok is very intentionally a user-first platform, and like to the extent that it will sacrifice everything else for the user experience. Like ads are extremely easy to skip by. The content is I know that deep in your heart you feel like you would want to give that creator who you like vibe with, you feel like you want to give them more of your time, but you don't really. You want to watch this guy hurt himself on a snowboard. Let's be honest with ourselves. And they're right. So like they are giving you what you, not what you would choose, but what you actually want. And that's wild. And so that's why it's such a sticky platform, but it makes it a harder place to build a business as a creator and to build an audience as a creator. So it's harder to develop a deeper relationship with people, which is democratizing. It creates way more opportunity for people to constantly be breaking in and getting that first exposure to audience and to attention. But it is because of that, you know, opportunity for breakthrough, there's always somebody ready to take your place. And so you have to figure out how to convert those people into something except for just a TikTok audience. And, you know, YouTube is the best place for that.
Yeah. For a bunch of reasons.
With YouTube launching and being successful about shorts, it does seem a little bit like maybe it's amazing to think that this is the way I'm thinking now, but maybe there is a threat to TikTok in YouTube's short strategy.
Interesting.
Whereas, you know, a year ago, I would have been thinking like, you know, is TikTok a threat to YouTube? Now I'm like, I mean, of course, it's a huge threat to YouTube. It is the first threat to YouTube, really. Like Facebook couldn't take them on, but TikTok can. And now I'm thinking like, how does YouTube take market share away from TikTok? Because YouTube is much better at making money.
I was just about to say
the platform.
I have a stat just recently that YouTube had a larger quarter four of last year than Netflix in revenue. I think it was like $8.5 billion of revenue. YouTube is making a lot of money. Now, it costs a lot of money to run, but they're making a lot of money.
Yep.
And also, one of the points you brought up earlier that I've thought about a lot is like the intrinsic value of an audience on one platform versus the other. Like, would you rather have 10 million views on a TikTok or 1 million views on a YouTube video? And it's kind of still weighted for the YouTube video at that point. So that's always been really interesting. And you look at the numbers, actually, the biggest piece of content I have ever created by views is a TikTok. Of course it is. And it's like 33 million views on a 7-second video or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you come up as a TikToker, you've built your brand, but not your business necessarily. You do, as a smart person, want to build a business around it on something more stable, like a YouTube channel. So it does make a lot of sense, the way we see it being built. You make TikToks. Do you consider yourself a TikToker at this point? You've made enough of them. You have like a presence there.
At this point, it would be almost embarrassing to not call myself a TikToker. Like, it'd be like I'm trying to pretend I'm not a TikToker.
Yeah.
And the other reason I kind of consider myself a TikToker is because I really admire a lot of the people I follow on TikTok. And we have, you know, in the same way as my colleagues on YouTube, you know, talked a bit on direct messages and stuff. And I just think that they're so cool and interesting and smart in the way that they are approaching their content and their audience, that like I feel like the only reason I don't have to call myself a TikToker would be like that I don't think that I'm embarrassed by it. And when I think about those people, I'd be almost deriding their creativity and thoughtful content if I pretend like I'm not one of them.
I mean, it used to be embarrassing to say you're a YouTuber. And now it's got a different connotation every month. Yeah. But now it's like, oh, nice. Like, I understand what that is. That's like kind of funny, because I've said to people I don't know that I'm like an Uber driver, if you just say you're a YouTuber, they're like, oh yeah, I know some of those. Like they understand it already. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, TikTok versus YouTube and monetization.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway.
And I'm Ed Elson.
And we're the hosts, the co-hosts. It's kind of unfair to call us co-hosts. I'm really the host. He's he's my Robin Givens. Let's just be clear on what this is. But anyways, we're the hosts of Prop G Markets, your go-to podcast for all things money. Every Monday, we provide brash, unfiltered analysis on market-moving news, high-flying stocks, growing sectors, stupid boardroom decisions, and master of the universe CEOs.
And on Thursdays, we speak with some of the world's greatest finance professors, Wall Street insiders, and industry experts to keep you informed without getting bored. So if you want to understand money and how you can get more of it, you have to talk about money, and we're here to help you do that. Follow Prof G Markets on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts to automatically receive new episodes every Monday and every Thursday.
That's right. The good news is we know how to get you economic security. The bad news is the answer is slowly. We'll tell you how on Prop G Markets.
Lifetime. Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So it can be tough to stay organized when your team is spread across time zones. With Coda, you can help keep your whole team on the same page with an all-in-one collaborative workspace that brings together the best of documents, spreadsheets, and apps into one platform. That means less time ping-ponging between different tabs and tools, and more time on your projects. So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned when managing planning cycles and while measuring objectives and key results. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So over 50,000 teams across the world collaborate with Coda, from the New York Times to Square, from Toast to TED and Uber. So if you want a platform that enables and empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. You can head over to coda.io/wave. So that's Coda, coda.io/wave to get started for free. coda.io/wave. But I think the thing that sort of ties all this stuff together is like YouTube has monetization built around sharing revenue on a percentage basis with its creators. And TikTok, mm-hmm. in its attempt on its way up to stealing tons of market share from YouTube, but wanting to keep creators on TikTok, has decided they want to also give revenue to their creators, but they've done it with a different mechanic. They've built a singular creator fund. And your video has done a better job of explaining it than I ever could, so it's going to be linked in the show notes. Everyone should watch that at least before getting to this part. But the worst part about this creator fund is that fundamentally, the better TikTok does, the less successful individual creators using that fund actually do. Is this a mistake by TikTok? Is this a greedy thing by TikTok? It's a weird, obvious thing that they should have all thought of by now. So I'm curious why you think they decided to go with a creator fund rather than revenue sharing.
It's super smart. Like it's you know, if they never experienced any pushback about it, like no, like it would just be smart. So basically the situation is there's a static pool of money. And so if currently there's like, let's say 10 billion views a day on TikTok, and they're distributing that fund among those people who earned those 10 billion views. Then if like 6 months from now, there's 20 billion views on TikTok a day because the platform grew, you get half as much money per view because there's more views and the same pot of money. Yeah. So that's the problem. It's amazing. And that is clearly the limitation of the static pool of money, but the creator fund idea itself, I think, is quite smart. Actually, we all together experienced that, like, it kind of was maybe bad for YouTube to be tying revenue, like people's revenue, directly to the advertisements running on their channel. And also, like, advertisements running on a video was a bit of a problem, because then it meant that, like, how does YouTube police, like, where Coca-Cola's advertisements show up? And they have this, like, preferred program where, like, we promise that the content is not terrible, but sometimes even the people in the preferred content might make stuff that's a little edgy.
Yeah.
And so we ended up in the situation where, like, they have to have this tremendously complicated moderation system to decide whether or not something is worthy of certain kinds of advertisements. It's a mess. YouTube and TikTok doesn't have to worry about that. The other thing that is great about a creator fund is that you can divide it up based on what you want to encourage. So, so I get higher CPMs than average because my audience is older and I make educational content and it's, like, really brand safe. But on TikTok, everybody basically makes the same CPM, but you could make it so that, a creator gets more money for their first million views than for their second million views, so that you're encouraging people to, because it's easier to get your second million, your second million views than your first million views. Mm-hmm. It's just like how it is. And you could make it so that you reward people for creating content that has more engagement, or is less controversial. Like, you can measure controversiality scores based on how, like, disliked something is, or how much sort of yelling there is and negative sentiment there is in the comments. Yeah. So you can do that. You could just sort of, as a platform, decide what kind of content you want to be encouraging with dollars. And you can't really do that the way that on YouTube, that's just decided by advertisers and where they want to advertise.
Yep.
So a example of a huge problem of this is, like, if you tend to make content for a Black audience in America, advertisers are less interested in buying that content because the average Black person in America has far less money than the average white person in America. So so you literally, just because you make content for Black people, make less money.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the weirdest questions that I've had, literally, about the adpocalypse that happened back in, I guess we've had more than one of them on YouTube, but about the association directly between the advertiser and the content that they appear in front of. I always thought it was pretty clear that a Coca-Cola ad appearing on a YouTube video didn't actually associate Coca-Cola with whatever's in that YouTube video. At least I personally always felt that way.
Yeah, for sure.
But it somehow became this really strong like reaction from all of these brands to pull out because they didn't want their brand associated. And I'm like, I've seen a lot of ads before a lot of, like when I see an ad on TV, for example, on in between like quarters in an NBA game, a lot of times it's a product that's related to sports because that makes sense and that's where the audience is. I don't remember the last ad I saw on YouTube and what video it was in front of. I don't even know. It's usually some reasonable product. I don't remember.
Do you not have YouTube Premium?
I do, but when I'm signed into it, like the Shorts account, which doesn't have Premium, then I see a bunch of ads and I forget to switch back. Yeah. So I'm like, I can't believe that that was such a massive driver of the adpocalypse, but it really was like the direct tie
brands. Do you want me to bore you with the deep reality of why that happened?
I would love you to. Okay. Yes.
So there's two components of it. The first is that the last like 80 years of television ads have been sold that way. They say you can reach this many people, but really what you're doing is you're aligning yourself with content. And in this case, the content is stuff that people feel really passionately about or that makes them feel good. And so it was easier to monetize like sports, for example, because people have a lot of passion around sports content. So it was much easier to monetize, to sell ads around the Super Bowl than it is to sell ads around like CNN, where you don't really know whether like what the vibe of that day is gonna be. And so that is how ad agencies have been selling brands on content on TV for decades. And so that is how brands think about it because that's how brand advertising agencies have talked about it to them. And it's also how the content providers have talked about it to them, how the television stations talk about it to them. So like that's been how you sort of like beyond just the demographics and beyond just the number of people you're going to reach, that's how you try to like add the extra icing on the cake. So they talk about this a ton and how important it is. And then finally, and you switch over to YouTube and it's like, it's not important anymore at all. Don't think about that. We're not advertising on the content. We're advertising to the person. It's just an algorithm. You are choosing the person to advertise to, not the content you're advertising on.
Right.
And which is more or less how it works, though the content still matters. And then the other important piece of that pie is that during the adpocalypse and before and also since, though it is getting a little less this way now, advertising agencies really hated Google. They hate them so much because Google is putting them out of business because Google does their job. Google says you don't have to work with an advertising agency. It's four clicks to figure out how to reach your audience. You can reach your audience better than you ever could with an ad agency. And ad agencies were like, that's wrong. We're in New York. We make $400,000 a year and we need to continue making $400,000 a year because I have a mortgage. Mm-hmm. So ad agencies were able to say to brands, look, I told you YouTube sucked. I told you Google sucked. Mm. They're putting your logo next to terrorist recruitment videos, next to people teaching other people how to stab each other. And now look what you've done. You've ruined your brand reputation. And also, the third piece is brands wanted leverage against YouTube. And like this was an opportunity to exert leverage against them. And it worked. And it kept CPMs low for years after that.
Yeah, this was so one of the things.
It was a very successful thing. It was very bad for YouTube.
It was like a chapter in internet history. I do remember going to one of the creator summits, which by the way is another thing YouTube does that I don't know that any other platform does, but it's sort of a gathering where YouTubers are talking directly to YouTube. And something that kept coming up was like, well, don't the advertisers need YouTube more than YouTube needs those advertisers that dropped out?
And been the case I make.
Yeah, they always need each other, but it's like, if you pull out of all of your advertising off of YouTube for whatever this reason you really believe in is, eventually you're going to realize you got to get back to that audience somehow, and those people are borderline unreachable any other way. So, come back.
Well, that's
right?
That seemed to be what changed this year, where YouTube's revenue went from $20 billion to $30 billion in 1 year. Yeah. And that's a wild number. That is, it's bigger than Netflix.
It's crazy.
And Netflix has like hundreds of millions of people who just give them $10 a month.
Yeah.
And YouTube's just doing it through advertising. Though, please sign up for YouTube Premium. It's so much better.
I second that.
Listening out there.
I highly recommend it. the ad-free experience is great.
It is,
Yeah. No, yeah, there's a, and now, so we're looking at Shorts and like how they're trying to take a little bit of market share back from TikTok. And it's kind of interesting because I've made videos. Actually, we've done this sort of a fun game. I'll make a short, a 45 second video in vertical. I'll edit it and I'll publish the exact same short on TikTok, Instagram Reels, Twitter Video, YouTube Shorts. And we'll always guess like how we think they'll do. Our Shorts channel is pretty new. It doesn't have as many subscribers, but we'll sort of guess like, I think the Reel will do better for this one for this reason. Or I think this TikTok's going to take like a 24 hour slow burn and then sort of take off.
Yeah.
YouTube Shorts hasn't really taken off for my very young Shorts channel, but we have noticed the TikToks fluctuate the most. It'll go from like 100,000 to 3 million to 200,000 to 12 million. And it is the most reliable slash unreliable. The latest one we did, the YouTube short, brand new, 10,000 views after 24 hours. On Twitter, 297,000 views. Instagram Reel, 1.95 million. TikTok, 1.7 million. And then the TikTok passed it. Just sort of unpredictable. Do you make your TikToks thinking about like which platform it might be best for? Are you sculpting your videos for TikTok specifically?
I make TikToks for TikTok. I try not to think about, you know, there's to some extent because the 1 minute limit I think about, because I'd rather make a video that's 1 minute, because then it I don't think that you can do YouTube Shorts that are over a minute.
Right.
And that will probably change, but I don't think it has yet. And so that's the thing I think about. But other than that, like, I'm making TikToks as a TikToker. Like, I feel engaged in the culture of that world at the moment. Like, I don't think that I will remain that way forever. But I'm engaged enough in the culture that I feel like I can do it, you know, in my own way as a 41-year-old science teacher, engage with it in a way that won't be seen as too embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then a lot of that stuff just won't make sense off TikTok. And so it will not be re-uploaded as a reel or as a short, but a lot of it will. And so it sort of comes down to like the kinds of content I make on TikTok. Some of like, if I'm answering science questions or doing a video about science, it's going to work anywhere. Whereas if I'm engaging with something that is inside of the current moment of TikTok,
right,
it wouldn't even make sense if I uploaded on TikTok 2 weeks from now,
yeah,
let alone on YouTube.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I feel like my philosophy has always been to upload content specifically for that platform. And if there are things that plug into the cultural nexus or whatever's happening in that moment, then that's even better. We're just sort of trying to come up with good short ideas and good video ideas in the tech world. There's lots of ideas out there and things to make, but on how to make them for TikTok is a question that I think about a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very different audience. Like that's, you know, it's not just it's got the culture of the platform. It's the look of the platform, but it's also just it's younger, it's more female. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. My science videos get like 70% female on TikTok, and they're like 80% male on YouTube Shorts. So like exact same piece of content.
That is really interesting. I'm going to check right now, actually, because I notoriously on a tech channel, what would you guess that my male female ratio is typically on a tech video?
I don't know. 85 to 15.
That would be world class. It's nowhere near that.
Really?
It's nowhere. Yeah,
Holy crap.
I've never seen a double digit female ratio on a tech channel on YouTube specifically.
Wow.
But that's YouTube. Mine's like 97.3.
Holy
sh. Yeah. And so I wonder if TikTok is, if anything, an opportunity to reach a completely different audience because of the different people using TikTok, specifically with different ratios of male to female. That's something I can't find the ratio right now. I got to look on a single video, I guess.
It's in there. You got that. TikTok's
analytics are not good.
Garbage.
Yeah, they're bad. I'll find it someday. I've got this weird page pulled up, but I'll find it later. But that's an interesting point. Okay, TikTok's got a creator fund now. You've exposed TikTok's creator fund for being maybe a little bit short-sighted or a little too smart. Do you think there's a world where they change it? Do you think there's a world where TikTok continues to grow, creators continue to start off on TikTok, and they want to stay on TikTok, and they find a reason to switch to maybe a percentage-based system to incentivize people to stay with TikTok long-term.
Yeah, I don't think there's a world in which they don't change it somehow. Maybe I'm just being really optimistic, but I think that that change might be, we hear you, we're going from 200 million a year to 300 million a year. And that to me does not solve the problem.
No, yeah.
I didn't even get to the end of the list of advantages to this, but one of the big ones is that you get to control that line item. And so as a business, you want to be in, you hate percentages. You want flat fees. Mm-hmm. So being in control of that line item, and I think that they would rather increase that number without making it a percentage, but it doesn't really solve the problem until it is a percentage. And the other, the question that I think that TikTok is trying to answer is our money that we would like to keep important to the long-term sustainability of the economic ecosystems of the creator economy on our platform? And I don't know the answer to that question. Like, as a creator, as a person who likes creators, I hope that the answer is that, like, in order to become as powerful as YouTube, you need to build the same moat that YouTube built, which is,
I believe that
it is
to be true.
By far the best place mm-hmm. to be a creator on the internet.
Yeah.
Twitch is also good, but it's still not as good as, I don't think it's as good as YouTube, because I think Twitch is more work for the money.
Twitch, I saw an interesting analogy, and it's similar to what I would describe YouTube as, but it's kind of like driving for Uber. You'll make money while you're doing it, and yep. then when it's over, yeah. when you stop driving, it stops.
And it's wild. The amount of money that I make from videos I made 10 years ago is like, really? Mm-hmm. That's still throwing off $50 a month. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
That one video.
Yeah. There's several. I mean, we all know what the ones that show up and recommended over and over and over again. We all have a couple of those. We'll take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about YouTube adding more features.
It's loud. Deafening, cacophonous.
It's a nightmare.
Oppressive.
And just what is it that many people think is pretty nightmarish and yet are still willing to shell out quite a bit of money for a night out at a restaurant?
Sound is the number one complaint that diners have about their experience. So why are restaurants so loud, and when did that start happening?
Is there anything anyone can do to fix it? We've got the answers on the latest episode of Gastropod.
All that, plus the science behind the perfect playlist to accompany your meal. This special episode is part of our new collaboration with the podcast Switched on Pop.
Find Gastropod and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
When was the last time you noticed a federal comment period? You know the type. Federal government is passing a law or changing a rule, and they want to hear what you think about it. Well, one of those comment periods just kicked off and runs for the next 2 months, and it's a big one. The federal government wants to know what you think about their plan to reschedule marijuana. Not what time you take your smoke break, Spicoli.
Sorry I'm late. It's just like this new schedule is totally confusing.
The federal government is basically trying to recategorize weed, and it could happen as soon as Election Day. The president says it's a big deal.
This is monumental.
But we reached out to a cannabis policy reporter at Politico to ask if she thought it was monumental, and she said yes, but also no. Our conversation is waiting for you at Today Explained.
There's some funny things about being on YouTube a long time, though, that you would have just the same perspective as me, if not more so, where you continue to run your YouTube channel, and then YouTube quietly changes something or adds a new feature, and it mm-hmm. looks like, this is always a question with YouTube and Google, it looks like this is something they're going to lean into pretty hard, but we're not sure if we want to jump in and maybe sacrifice analytics, or what's going to change about our channel if we start doing the thing it seems like the algorithm or a new feature is pushing. Shorts is one of those things where it's like, do I want to post shorts on my main channel? Is that going to, will those be separated? Like, do you think about that at all? Do you, you do shorts on your, on one of your channels, right?
Yeah, we do shorts on SciShow and we do shorts. I have my own, like I basically repost my TikToks on my personal channel. Yeah, I mean, there are lots of times when YouTube has launched an exciting new feature and it's like, should I go all in on this? Because I've seen these things flop, you know? And I felt like that initially about shorts, honestly. I was like, is this a good idea for YouTube to be doing? Like, how all in on this really are they? How big of a threat is TikTok to them? Now I'm in the place of like, YouTube not having shorts would is like Blockbuster not having streaming. You're like, all right, maybe it's going to hurt their bottom line a little bit, but like they'll still exist. Yeah. You know, they will continue to compete in the new future because I don't ever get fear from any executives at YouTube who I talk to. They never exude anything except like collected, in charge, confident.
Yeah.
But like, I think people are pretty freaked out by TikTok. I think that people, like, I think investors are, I think that people in the creator economy are, I think that YouTube, people at YouTube are like, you know, this is a complete guess, but I would guess that 2021, despite being a year where YouTube's revenue went up a lot, it's probably the first year ever that YouTube's traffic in the US might have gone down. It certainly did not grow like the way that it has in the past. And like, because TikTok had to eat away from somewhere, you know, it can't all come from TV. It can't all come from socializing, which is probably where a lot of it came from. So yeah, the I think YouTube's legitimate, like, should be freaked out by TikTok, and like, I think that they have no choice but to be inside of shorts, which I'm ambivalent about. Like, part of me is like, I don't want this on the platform because I want this to be a pure experience. Like, I want it to be like Twitter, where it's just like words, and that's, let's just be that.
It's the way I always liked it.
But if I were in charge of YouTube, it would be a significantly smaller company. That's for sure.
That's fair. Yeah, it is definitely like the more we've looked at Vine, like Vine had this huge come up, huge platform, huge creators gone today. And, you know, those creators are no longer obviously on Vine. It makes me think like no matter how big of a platform comes up to challenge YouTube, YouTube will always just have to find a way to absorb its features or its creators. One of those two things. And I don't know, let's say YouTube makes a perfect clone, an incredible solution to the TikTok problem, and suddenly TikTok starts to shrink. It's like, well, that's about as good of a competitor as we've ever had to YouTube. And there is theoretically a danger to only having one video platform be successful. You want some competition. Do you ever think about YouTube as a monopoly, or is that just, it's just like the internet's video archive?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think of YouTube as a monopoly in its space, you know. But like it sort of begs the question, like where is the line you draw between these things? Like is YouTube like competing with Netflix? Is it competing with Facebook? Is it competing with all of these things in the attention economy are basically competing for your time, and so they're competing with everyone in media. So in that way, they are not a monopoly. But in as much as like the kind of content that I love to create, know how to create, have experimented with the craft of, and am like deeply familiar with, you're like, yeah, like I can't move my audience to another platform. I kind of don't want to. But I think that you've also see people diversifying. Like obviously this podcast is on YouTube, but it is also wherever you can get a podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why YouTubers make podcasts, is because it's a way to have a deeper, you know, connection, because you get to like hang out for more than for a longer period of time. And also it's like, it's a piece of content that gets to exist outside of that ecosystem, diversify your sort of like content that you're making. And I think that a lot of people, like creators, talk about that all the time. Like, how do you make sure you're not like a single platform creator? Because it's hard, but like it's something people spend a lot of time working on and thinking about. So technically, YouTube is certainly not a monopoly. No one could actually argue that in court. As a person who makes YouTube videos, it does feel like they are, because like there's no really other place where I feel like I could successfully post YouTube videos. But I think that TikTok innovates very quickly, and if the big advantage that YouTube has over TikTok is the ability and like the desire to share 55% of revenue, it wouldn't be hard for TikTok to just do that. You know, it's not like I'm pretty sure they're not hurting for money. Like it may be that they have under monetized up to now, but regardless, like anyone would give them money. Like it's the most successful thing that's happened in media, the fastest rising thing that's happened in media ever. So I think that they're going to continue to evolve, and like that might be different forms of video, but I hope that it is also more opportunities for monetization.
Same. It is kind of interesting to think about framing YouTube as a monopoly or not. Like if YouTube were to argue in court, they would say, oh no, yeah, we're competing with Facebook and Netflix and TV and all these podcast things. Like we're just another media company. But also in the, just like you described, like in this world of like creator made videos in this certain way, it's like there is no other place, which is really interesting. Yeah. And like podcasts, for example, we make our podcast here, not just because we want to connect to our audience in like a new way, but also discoverability in the podcast world is awful unless you have a discoverability engine, and YouTube is just the best one. So here we are. So yeah, they have a lot of opportunities to branch out into new things and compete in new ways. And so anytime another competitor pops up and they feel like they want to be involved in that space, boom, YouTube Shorts. Now they're in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the thing that YouTube did and the thing that TikTok should be wanting to do is to sort of like, they're not just like an application. They're like the operating system for the online video creator community, you know? And you know, there are competing operating systems. Like you can watch VOD videos on Twitch, and like you can also watch live streams on YouTube, but like they are the one. They are the sort of iOS of video, of uploadable video, rather than sort of walled garden video.
Love it. That's a great analogy. I have one more question for you, Hank, and it's a little bit off the beaten path. It's a little bit of a twist. Cool. I'm very curious, how fast can you type the alphabet? Yeah.
This is a TikTok trend recently. Is that what you're referencing?
No, even like better. Even better. Okay. This is a classic end of the Waveform podcast bit that we're doing now, which is every guest.
Okay.
I'm going to send you in the studio here a link actually to an alphabet type test. And if you can open this site and screen record your attempt at typing the alphabet, we actually have a leaderboard of previous guests on the podcast. And we may have bet on how well you do on this leaderboard, but I won't tell you what we've bet yet. So if you could give, are we doing three attempts? Three attempts? If you could give your three attempts at typing A through Z, that would be pretty sick.
I gotta open a screen record.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you just assume I know how to. I can do a screen record, which is of course true because I'm a YouTuber. But like,
I can. Are you on a Mac or a Windows?
I'm on Mac. I got it.
It's, you got right QuickTime? Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. All right. Try and close. Make sure that there's no confidential information on my screen right now.
Right.
It's like they got a sexy Garfield in the corner there.
Are you on a like a mechanical keyboard or a normal keyboard?
I'm on a normal keyboard, the one that comes with the Mac.
Okay. Sick. Same.
Okay. And I should just go?
Yep. As soon as it literally will just start as soon as you hit the letter A.
Okay.
And it'll time you out.
3, 2, 1. I don't feel like that was particularly fast.
That
did
sound. That sounded pretty good. Does it give you a time?
I don't know. I pushed enter and it went away.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If you, okay. I think as soon as you get to Z, it spits out a time.
And then I pushed enter and I shouldn't have done that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll, or maybe just... I missed a letter.
Oh, if you miss a letter, it won't get to Z.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, what the hell did I do wrong? Oh, I didn't hit G. Okay, well, let's start over again.
It's harder than it sounds. It sounds really easy, and then you get to like W, X, Y, Z, and it's really tough.
Yeah, my pinky gets tired. Okay. Okay, 8.8.
Would you like to give it one more try? We've got a leaderboard here, but I won't tell you where it is until the end.
Okay, I'll give you one more try.
All right.
I'm going. Oh, man. Well, that's not going to do it. I'm going again.
Okay. Oh, that's a big jump. That vaults you up the leaderboard. 7.2 puts you right behind Colin and Samir for number 9.
Did they do it together? Because they just love each other so much.
They took their best time of their combined attempts. That is incredible. If you could send me that screen recording, that would be amazing. But anyway, okay. Thank you, Hank, for joining us. This has been an adventure. I like talking to creators about creating. And the creator universe feels like being in a superhero talking to other superhero characters. It's kind of fun. Thank you.
It's super interesting. I really appreciate all the questions. It's cool. It's nice to finally meet you.
For sure. Hopefully we do it again sometime. I know you're super busy, but until then, I'll be watching more TikToks.
All right. Just keep scrolling.
For sure. All right. Take care.
See ya.
Later.
Bye.
All right, that's it with Hank Green. I again want to just take a second to thank him. He's obviously super busy, and we are super happy to have him and have that chat. I thought it was really fun.
I think it was really good. We've talked about TikTok so much here, and just like he's really deep into that. And then along with the fact that it's really fun from an outsider watching you, who's been on YouTube for so long, talk to someone who's been on even longer.
I mean,
like I have some knowledge, but watching two people like that just talk is just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I hope he can come on the show again. He knows so much about social media. So like if he wants to be our resident expert, I'd love that.
Kind of like how Neil deGrasse Tyson's our resident astrophysicist.
We should have
Hank, our resident social media expert.
Yeah, I mean, he'd basically be a third co-host at that point, but I'm all for it. Hopefully Hank, if you're ever in the New York City area, come visit us. We'd love to have you actually sit down. I'd love to be part of it too.
Real question. If he comes into the studio and does another episode in person, does he get to do the typing test again on a new keyboard, or does he have to stick with his old result?
I don't know. We'll have to.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah. We'll just.
Okay. We'll figure that one out.
Copy Hank or Hank_1 final.mov. That was great. Really fun conversation. We will see you all next week. Peace. I've never done the outro before. That was weird.
That's perfect. That's how it's done.
Waveform is produced by Adam Elena. We are partnered with Vox Media, and our intro outro music was created by Vane Sill.